Well, many of you are probably still excited and celebrating from yesterday's grand final result, seeing the Eagles win in a real absolute nail biter. And I can see some of you have got a little bit of stress still on the face kind of thing. But I'm sure it was a great game, wasn't it? And as you're celebrating, as you're enjoying that, please spare a thought for the Adelaide Crows, because this is what could have happened to the Eagles yesterday. Even if you're not into footy, I think you'll find the story of what happened to Adelaide absolutely fascinating. Because last year, they finished on top of the table. They were killing it. And not only that, they made the grand final. They didn't turn up very well on the day, but, you know, they made the grand final. In anyone's book, finishing top of the table, making the grand final, that's a pretty good year, I'd reckon. And so everyone thought they're going to have another good year this year. They recruited well in the off-season. They got more talent to their already talented list. And all the experts tipped them to at least be contenders, let alone win the whole thing. But this year was an absolute disaster for Adelaide. They plummeted down the ladder. They missed the finals. It was an absolute shocker. What was the reason? What went wrong? Well, there's a few little things, but every club had their issues, every club had their injuries. The main thing for Adelaide was a pre-season training camp on the Gold Coast. They brought in this group called Collective Minds, which is this group that trains people in elite mental fortitude and toughness. And they brought this group in to kind of give them that next level edge on mental fortitude. What they did, though, just was horrible. They took some of the players out into the bush on about a 24-hour drive and blindfolded them the whole way there. They coerced the players to share their deepest, darkest secrets and fears. They even hired a comedian to come in and mock the players the whole time. During the time, he actually sang the Richmond theme song, which was the team that beat them in the grand final, again and again and again, to just really rub it in and kind of strengthen their mental fortitude. Now, from what reports have said, it was so bad that some of the players are still getting counselling for it. It was a shocker. The players were hurt, they felt uncared for, their trust was broken, and so they couldn't produce on the field, they couldn't play as a team. It's amazing how what happened with Adelaide was they got so focused on a goal that they missed what was really important. They let the most important things fall off the radar. They were so dedicated to pursuing greater mental toughness that they lost sight of how important it is to pursue player welfare and caring and loving your players. And it can be just like that for us, can't it? We've got all sorts of pursuits in our life, but we can let the most important things fall off the radar because we're pursuing less important things. I mean, we could be doing things like making sure we provide for our family, paying the bills. That's really important, isn't it? It's got to be done. We want to make sure we raise our kids well. That's a good pursuit. Learning new skills, getting a degree, getting qualified in things. That's a good pursuit. Staying healthy, getting healthy, socializing, serving at church. These are all good pursuits to chase after. But if we're not careful, we'll get tunnel vision and be so focused on these things that we'll miss what really matters. See, what's the one pursuit God wants you to focus on? The one thing that if you get it right, everything else falls into place. Well, it's there for you in 14 verse 1. Have a look. It's two words. Pursue love. Pursue love. That's the big idea of this whole passage. That's the thing that it's driving at. Pursue love. Seek to be more loving. Prioritize above everything else, cultivating a other person-centered heart. See, the Corinthian church, They had tunnel vision on all the wrong things. They'd been focusing on success and on the gifts, spiritual gifts. They'd been focusing on mystical experiences. And not that those things were bad in and of themselves, but their priority should have been pursuing love. That's what matters. That's what counts. But it doesn't just happen, does it? It is a pursuit. It's something we've got to work at. And so, in this passage, we get three reasons why we should pursue love. Here's what they are. Firstly, pursue love because love is essential. Pursue love because love is excellent, and pursue love because love is eternal. So let's look at these three and see why we should pursue love. First one, pursue love because love is essential. Take a look at verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, if I can speak in heavenly languages and have these amazing experiences of God, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. I'm just like a crying baby at night. It's irritating. It's annoying. That's the point. There's nothing here of value. It's noise. It's nothing. It's of no benefit. Or if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, if I've got the greatest insight, if I've got a PhD in God and I can understand the Bible better than anyone else, or if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, that's not talking about saving faith there, that's talking about supernatural faith, that sort of when you have that sort of faith, the supernatural, miraculous things happen. When you pray, wow, things happen. If you have faith like that, but have not love, I'm nothing. Or if I give away all I have, you sell your house, you sell your car, you sell all your clothes, all your possessions, you give it to charity, you give it to the church, you build 8 orphanages in Africa, you give away all you have. Or if you deliver up your body to be burned, so you go around telling people about the Lord Jesus, but they don't like it, and so they kill you for it. If you do those things but have not love, even though you've given so much, you gain nothing. Do you see what it's saying? It's saying you can have the best gifts, the best abilities, the greatest insights into God, the greatest commitment to God, and even then it can all be worthless. Oh, other people will look at you and they'll go, wow, that's so impressive. I can't believe that they can do that. Oh, wow. But God, he looks down and he goes, yeah, they're spiritually bankrupt. They're inwardly dead. They don't have my spirit. I mean, think of it, Jesus' life when he sent out the 12 disciples. And, you had the 11 of them. Do you think they sort of looked at Judas and went, oh, man, today Judas is really struggling to do a miracle today. As he did, yesterday. He's really, and his sermons, they're really dud. Man, I hope we can get a replacement. I never thought that. They looked at Judas and thought, wow, that guy's just as gifted as every one of us. He was. But he didn't have love. Love is what counts. Love is what's important. But did you see, it's not just loving actions that are essential. It's having a loving heart, a loving attitude. Have another look again at verse 3. If I give away all I have, surely, now there's a loving action. Or if I deliver up my body to be burned, there's a loving action. But you can still not have love, even though you did those loving actions. You can do a loving action, but not have a loving heart. So you could come and you could be on our set-up, pack-up team. Every Saturday we've got a group of guys who comes in here and they put this place all together, and then Sunday night they all tear it apart, and it's great. You could come along and be part of that, and you could do a great job. You could be the chair-stacking guru, okay? You're the best of chair-stacking people out there. But you could come, and you have that little inner voice, and it says, man, I'm doing so much better than these other Christians. Have you seen the way they stack chairs? No good. I stack chairs. I'm a super Christian. And these guys, they're just on the prep team. I actually lead a growth group and I help out at Sunday school. And that's a horrible thing to think, isn't it? You can have the right action and have the wrong heart. That inner voice just gives us away, doesn't it? What's your inner voice say sometimes when you do the right action? See, love is essential. It's a must. We've got to have it, whether it be in our actions or our heart. It's a bit like years ago, my family, we bought our first ever four-wheel drive. We got a Nissan X-Trail. And for me, that was huge because I thought, yes, I've got some manliness points now, you know, to have a big four-wheel drive. It was a beautiful thing. It was a big black beast. And I loved it. It was a great car. We paid 10 grand for it, which felt like money really well spent. But 2 years in, one day I turned the engine on and a head gasket blew. And it blew a massive hole into the engine head. Basically, overnight, this thing that we loved, that was worth so much, became worthless. The wreckers would only give us a few hundred bucks for it. From 10 grand to nothing. All because the engine blew. Because the engine is the essence of the car, isn't it? What's a car without an engine? Just a really annoying trailer or something, isn't it? You need an engine. Whereas if it had been the sunroof, well, who cares? I can live without a sunroof. If the air conditioning had gone bunk, look, I can wind a window down. Those are optional extras. But the engine, that's the heart and soul of the car. And it's like that for us as individuals. If we don't have love, we haven't got the essence of what it is to be a Christian. It may actually suggest we aren't. What about as a church? If we don't have love, we can have massive buildings, great preaching, all sorts of wonderful things. But if we don't have love, what have we got? See, one of the problems is it's so easy to mask our lovelessness, isn't it? We can mask it with all sorts of things. We can mask it with big buildings. We can mask it with our abilities. We can mask it with our actions. We can mask it with a really polished, well-done church service. There's always we can mask lovelessness. And it's dangerous. We need to keep checking our hearts. Have we got love? Are we pursuing love? It's essential. But that's not the only reason to pursue love. We should also pursue love because love is excellent. Love is excellent. Take a look at verse 4. You might recognize it from some weddings. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Who doesn't want to be at a church that loves like this, or in a family that loves like this, or in a workplace that loves like this? Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. I mean, isn't these beautiful verses, aren't they? Because love is beautiful. It's a delight. It's not just something you have to do. It's awesome. But I don't know how popular these verses would be at weddings if people actually saw the double meaning that's going on here. Because yes, this is an ode to love. It's pointing out how great love is. But it's also doing something else. It's holding a mirror to us to show our lovelessness, our ugliness. See, this was written to the Corinthian church, and it's written in a really targeted way, because all these things are things that the Corinthians were failing at. Being patient and kind, that they weren't patient and kind with each other. They had all sorts of divisions and factions, people hurting each other, taking each other to court. They were envious of each other. Some were envious of the gifts. Some were boasting about the different gifts they had. These are all things that the Corinthians were getting majorly wrong. Actually, it's something I feel like I get wrong all the time too. These verses are quite cutting. Let me show you how. Try this little exercise. Put your name in where you see the word love. Put your name in where you see the word love. I'll put my name in just to give you the idea. So it's like this. Brendan is patient. Yeah, that doesn't fit. I think just back last week to when my little boy, Ethan, he was trying to sort something. He was kind of being really annoying. And, well, patient would be, yeah, I can put up with that. I can deal with that. I can live with that. Patient is not reacting really grumpily and badly like I did. Brendan's not patient. What about kind? Brendan is kind. That's about being tender-hearted and compassionate and merciful. It's about not retaliating with anger, but retaliating with kindness and love. Well, you know what? When people mistreat me, I think just the other day at work, actually, someone said something I really didn't like. And you know what? I didn't give them what they didn't deserve. I gave them what they deserved. I told them what I thought. I mean, Brendan's not... What about Brendan does not envy? Well, that's so not true. Brendan just has to step out on his front lawn and look at all the houses down the road, at all the other good cars and the other nice things that the people nearby have. And Brendan thinks, oh, gee, God's holding out. Why didn't I get that? See, as you put your own name in, it hurts, doesn't it? It exposes you. But try this. Here's another fun little exercise. Put Jesus' name in where it says love. Jesus is patient. Think about how many times I've stuffed up. Man, I've stuffed up big time again and again and again. The only thing I can add to my salvation is more sin. And yet, you know what Jesus does? He doesn't go, well, Brendan, that's time 791 and you said you wouldn't do it again. He goes, no, no, I still love you. I still care for you. You're still mine. What about Jesus is kind? So I mistreat Jesus. I don't treat him as I should. How's he retaliate? He retaliates with kindness, with mercy. He doesn't give me what I deserve. What about Jesus does not insist on his own way? The idea there is it's about not being self-seeking. When Jesus came to earth, he was the furthest thing from being self-seeking. He served others. He looked out for what other people need. He gave up what he needed for the sake of others. That's what he did at the cross, wasn't it? He wasn't seeking his own interests at the cross. He was seeking my interests. What about this beautiful little one? Jesus is not resentful. In the NIV it says, does not keep record of wrongs. See, Jesus is not there. I must admit, there are times I think Jesus is like this, and that's how much of a sinner I am. I think he's up there in heaven, and he's recording every little wrong thing I did, waiting at a later time to bring it up. Hey, Brendan, did you see what you've been doing? Well, you know what's going to happen now. No, it's not like that. Jesus doesn't keep a record of my wrongs to throw it in my face. Here's what he does. He dies on the cross to tear up my record of wrongs, to do away with them completely. How loving is he? You know, if you were watching the footy yesterday, you might have heard Bruce McAvaney say something like, oh, that was courage personified. You know, what a great, he threw himself in there. If Bruce McAvaney was commentating on Jesus' life, do you know what he'd say? He'd say, that was love personified. Because Jesus is love personified. He's the ultimate picture and portrait of love. And as you get to know his love for you, it changes you so that you start to look like him, so that you start to love like him. You might have seen 4 years ago there was a film that came out called Unbroken that was directed by Angelina Jolie. And it was all about the story of Louis Zamperini. He was a long-distance runner who made it to the Olympics for America. Very skilled, very gifted guy, very determined guy. And he went and joined the American Air Force during World War II. His plane got hit and he was stuck out in the ocean for days and days and days with no food, no water, he and a couple of other guys. And it was horrible. But they finally got picked up. They thought, yes, we're going to be saved. But they got picked up by the Japanese army. And they got thrown into a Japanese prison camp where they were tortured, abused, hurt. Just the movie outlined some of the most horrible things that you could possibly think of. Now, for Louis, he struggled with this. When he got to the end of the war, he survived. He went back home and he drank, he smoked. He couldn't cope with what had happened to him. And he went to a Billy Graham crusade. And he heard about Jesus' love for him. And it radically changed his life. He saw that he was loved. And so he started becoming more loving. It saved his marriage. He actually became a Christian preacher who went around preaching about forgiveness. He met up with his captors in Japan and said, "Hey, I forgive you. I know what you did to me was horrible, but I forgive you." It's incredible what Jesus' love can do. Even the guy writing this, Paul, he was a guy who went around killing Christians. And Jesus' love so changed him that he became someone who loved and cared for Christians. That's what Jesus' love does. Now, you might be sitting here and you're thinking, yeah, but do I really need Jesus to be loving? Like, there's a lot of loving people in our world. Surely, you know, can't I be loving without Jesus? And I'd want to say, yeah, you can. You're right. To a point. To a point. Because, yeah, you'll be loving, but you'll only love the people who love you, probably. Will you actually love the people who are really hard cases, who mistreat you? Will you love in a way where it really costs? Or is it just sort of that niceness, being polite, that sort of thing? Because I don't know of any other way that you can have that sort of radical love other than by knowing Jesus' love for you. Let me give you a way you could actually do that this week. What you could do, if you want to get to know Jesus' love for you, is take this piece of paper and put it on your fridge. And every day as you get up and you're waking up and you're cleaning the sleep off your eyes and you're trying to grab for the milk for your cereal, you look at that piece of paper on the fridge and you go, oh yeah, what's today's word? Okay, love is patient. How have I been unloving? How have I not been patient with people? Think about that. How should I be? And then think, how has Jesus been patient with me? Just work through that every single day for this week and a little bit into next week. I reckon it'll warm your heart. You'll go, wow, Jesus is so much more loving than I thought. I can't believe he loves me like that. So pursue love, because love is excellent. It's a delight. But there's one more reason we should pursue love. And that's because love is eternal. Take a look at verse 8. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they'll pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. See, what's going to last into eternity? What's going to be happening 8 billion years from now? Is there going to be preaching in heaven, do you reckon? Is there going to be growth groups in heaven? No, I'll tell you what will continue. Love. Love will continue. Because that's what's been going on for all time. That's been in eternity past, there was love. Because God is love. He's a Trinity. He's one God of three persons who relates to one another in love. The Father loves the Son and the Spirit. The Spirit loves the Father and the Son. The Son loves the Father. And it's love. It's all about love. That's at the heart of the universe. It's been like that. And it will always be like that. Actually, that's what makes heaven heaven. What makes heaven heaven is not just, you know, that we have fun stuff and it's a nice place. It's love. It's where love is as it ought to be. That's why church should be a little slice of heaven. Because we're meant to be the people who love. But even the greatest gifts, well, they're going to stop. There's not going to be preaching in heaven. Because why do we have preaching now? It's so we can know about God and find out about God and get to know what he's like. But in heaven, you won't go, oh, yeah, I really want to hear a sermon on God. And you go, oh, well, there's God. I'll just go get to know him. Like, it's kind of, there's no need of those things anymore. Even the greatest gifts, there won't be any need of them in eternity. But there will be love. That's the point of verse 12. Look there. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. It's going to be awesome. We're going to see fully and we're going to enjoy God's love and love one another. But we got to get it right now. We've got to get the priority right now. Look at verse 11. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. See, there are things that are just inappropriate for me to do as an adult. If I came up here with a big diaper on and started crawling around on the stage and saying goo goo gaga, it just would be really inappropriate, right? That'd be very childish. There are some things you leave behind. Well, what was childish that the Corinthians were doing? It wasn't that they were wearing nappies. It was that they were so focusing on the gifts, so focusing on themselves, that they became loveless. And the Bible's saying here to us, why would you do that? Don't be immature. Love's the thing that lasts into eternity. Make that your focus. Make that your priority. It'd be inappropriate if you don't. Or put it this way. How's your investment portfolio at the moment? See, imagine if you'd years and years ago put all your money into Ansett Australia. Some of you are going, what the heck is Ansett Australia? Well, they were a big airline many years ago. They were kind of Qantas's main rival, but they went completely bankrupt. I mean, if you'd put all your money into them, you'd be feeling pretty bummed out. But if you'd put all your money into Qantas, well, you'd be stoked. You would have made a good return. It's still going. See, a good investment is about investing in the thing that carries on. Well, there's all sorts of things we can invest in this life. But when we get to glory, the thing we'll be glad we invested in is going to be love. That's what's going to count. That's the best thing to pour yourself into. And it's not bad to pour yourself into other things, but make love your priority. So can you see just how important it is to pursue love, to cultivate a heart of love? There's three reasons. Pursue love because love is essential, love is excellent, and love is eternal. But you might be sitting here today and you're thinking, all right, cool, I've got it, I get it. I should pursue love. How do I do it? I get that I should. How do I get started? Well, to finish, let me give you five things that I think will really help you out. Number one, pray for love. Pray for love. Pray through these things. Pray that you'd become more patient. Pray that you'd become more kind. We're talking about something supernatural. We're talking about something that's at the heart of God and the heart of heaven. If we're going to do this, we're going to need God's help. Pray for love. But actually, there's something else. You could actually pray for other people. Because that's at the essence of what love is, isn't it? So if you're praying for other people, that'll make you become more loving. So pray for love. Number two, picture Jesus' love for you. We've kind of talked about that already. You want to be picturing how Jesus has loved you. But make it vivid. Make it real. Use your imagination. Replace it. We've all got these wrong images in our heads of Jesus. If you want to feel his love, you need to replace those wrong images with new ones, with ones based on what the Bible says. So you might think, oh, sometimes I picture God as kind of this ogre in heaven and he's just against me. No, 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 this is saying he's for you, he loves you. Don't picture God writing a list of wrongs, a record of wrongs. Picture Jesus tearing it up by his death on the cross. Use vivid pictures to warm up your heart. Thirdly, practice love even if others won't. Do you know, this is one of the real roadblocks to pursuing love. Is as soon as other people don't love us back, we go, well, I just don't want to be loving. But there's no asterisk here that says, well, if other people mistreat you, if other people are jerks to you, don't pursue love. No, there's nothing like that. You've got to pursue love even if people are horrible to you and are ugly to you. So pursue it, even if they won't change. This needs to be our pursuit. Fourthly, pick role models who are loving rather than gifted. We've all got people we look up to, we aspire to, we want to be like. But don't just look for the people who are really skilled, capable. Look up to the people who are really loving. They're the sort of people you want to emulate. They're the sort of people you want to copy. They're the sort of people you want to pick their brain. Copy the loving people. And fifthly, plan to regularly review your heart. These are things we've always got to keep coming back to. Am I pursuing love? How have I gone this last 6 months? Plan to regularly review your heart. Because if we don't, we'll be like the Adelaide Crows. We'll have had a wrong focus. We'll be so focused on the wrong thing that it'll lead us to an absolute disaster. We need to make love our goal. Can you just for a second imagine the impact that it would have on our homes, our church, our city, if we pursued love? Don't you reckon your family would just be a happier place to be in? Don't you reckon church would just be such a joy to come to each week if we were just all dedicated to pursuing love? Don't you think the rest of Perth would look at us and go, man, I want what they have if we pursued love? Let's pursue love.